Welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. On paper, at least, Iran has won a historic victory over the United States. The MOU demands the U.S. recognize Iran as a legitimate and even powerful state actor. Iran defeated two nuclear states, the United States and Israel. Can it now win the peace? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, Mohammad Mirandi in Tehran. He is a professor at the University of Tehran. In Beirut, we have Ali Marad. He is a journalist and political commentator. And in London, we cross to Zaid Bilbagi. He is a political advisor focusing on the Middle East and North Africa region. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want. All right, let's go first to Mohammad Mirandi in Tehran. A lot to discuss, my friend. But I just want to say from the outset, it's been a long journey, and I'm very privileged and proud to have been part of the way with you in reaching this day. Now, it's not over. It's far from over, but an amazing milestone has been achieved here. And as I said in my introduction, after 47 years, the United States is required now to respect the sovereignty and rights of the Islamic State of Iran. And I think that's an amazing accomplishment. Go ahead, Mohammad.
Well, you've been with us from the beginning, as long as I remember. So, yes, it is a historical achievement. Of course, as you rightly pointed out, it is on paper. Iran won the war, not just by surviving, but by hitting back very hard till the very last moment, the Israeli regime, U.S. bases, and retaliation against the attacks on Iranian infrastructure. But also, Iran won the siege warfare that Trump initiated, a double-edged sword where he and Netanyahu sacrificed the global economy to strangle Iranians, but he failed there as well. So at the negotiating table, Iran continued that success, but you put your finger on the exact point that is of concern, and that is this is on paper. The Iranians have a lot of leverage, and they're not going to be complacent. They don't trust the United States. And of course, Netanyahu and the Israeli regime and the Zionists will do whatever it takes to wreck this agreement. They will massacre, they will murder, they will plunder, they'll do whatever they can to stop it. So no one is being naive about the situation. But right now, as we speak, they continue to murder in Lebanon. They continue to slaughter in Gaza. Ever since Trump's fake ceasefire, where all these regional leaders went together in Egypt and whitewashed his crimes and gave their stamp of approval on his fake ceasefire, 1,000 Palestinians have been massacred in Gaza alone. That's excluding what's going on in the West Bank and, of course, in Lebanon. So there are tough days ahead, and there could be fighting again. And the global economy is almost literally on right beside the cliff. I mean, Trump himself last night or the day before admitted that there are only 4 weeks of oil and reserves left.
Yeah, well, and for the American context here, he even openly admitted that he didn't want to be the Herbert Hoover of his time. I was surprised that he had that historical knowledge. I'm not sure he had the historical knowledge to understand the signing of the agreement in the Palace of Versailles, which, of course, in June of 1919, another great surrender was played out here. Let me go to Ali right now, because the memorandum of understanding, I mean, obviously we're going to see Trump and his acolytes go on a marketing spree that this is the end of everything. But really, the memorandum of understanding is really a test for the United States, testing whether Iran can trust the United States.
Exactly. First of all, thank you for having me. Greetings to you and your viewers. Well, if you take a look to the memorandum of understanding, the 14 terms in it, you would have this notion that the Iranians actually gave the Americans a period of time to test their willingness and their intentions, actually, because we are used to Trump being playful here when it comes to Iran. He went to negotiations and he came with military force more than a time. So the one who is suspicious here is the United States. And if you listen, for example, to Zionists now, they are accusing Trump of having a deal with Iranians that cannot be trusted. But we know, we all know that the opposite is the accurate situation here, because the Americans, they left the agreement. They had an agreement in 2015, and Trump himself withdrew from the agreement in 2018. So the one here to be suspicious and to be under the watch is the Americans, because we know that the Israel lobby now in Washington, they are trying to exert some pressure on Trump to force him to maybe alter the memorandum of understanding, or maybe to affect the way the negotiations would be carried out in the next 60 days.
Yeah, I mean, it's, well, if you want to talk about trust, it's Trump's fault for trusting the Israelis, okay? Iran long ago stopped trusting the United States. Zaid, let me go to you in London here. You know, in looking at the text, and I remember all during the week here, is it a real text and what version of it is true on all of this? And once it came out, and I read it very, very carefully, three or four times, and Iran wrote just about every single word of it. This is a paradigm shift. It's the United States always dictating to everyone else, but the United States had to take dictation from the Iranians on this. And I was very dubious when they call it the Memorandum of Understanding. That's kind of like right before you do something meaningful, but this is a master class in diplomacy. This is, we're going to see if you have any learning capacity. These are our words. Do you understand them? Go ahead.
I mean, quite literally, Peter, I'm sure you read them in their original Persian as well, which I think was an interesting footnote to negotiations. The asymmetry of this conflict and the asymmetry of its peace, I think, are the two stories, which I think will be studied. I would, however, caveat, this is a memorandum of understanding, and I do not doubt that there will be certain nefarious forces that will be seeking to disrupt and dislodge this fragile peace. Before the war, we had been advising clients that this was a breather, very much a pause. Summer temperatures in the Gulf had crept up on the US military, making certain operations incredibly impossible and inoperable. And I think after the 17th of August, we predict there to be an extension of the fragile peace, but I do not see peace as being final, unfortunately, for all the countries in the region and the peoples of the region. There remains unfinished business from the perspective of US and Israeli decision makers, which is troubling, given the amount of tumult and disturbance and loss of life that has taken place.
But I agree with you. This is not my first rodeo, as they say. I don't think there's going to be an overall treaty of bringing peace to the region. But what we've seen through this conflict and the way Iran is allowing the entire region to exit from this level of violence is that it's shown its deterrence. Now, if you want to go back in, you want to do it again, it'll be up to you. I mean, so I think that's the shift here. Let me go to Professor Morandi. But that's the shift here is that, you know, if you want to break it, you know, and if you have a problem with your junior partner, Israel, that's your problem. Okay, I mean, you take care of it. That's why, again, this memorandum of understanding is brilliant in the sense that it's a bilateral agreement. It's not with Israel. Israel is America's problem. Professor Morandi.
Absolutely. And I think both of your guests We're basically alluding to that as well. This is a major turning point. This MOU is a historic document, and it is reflective of the fact that the United States has lost this war, probably the worst defeat that they've ever had, even greater than Vietnam in many ways. More significant. Yes, exactly. I mean, it wasn't the 10,000-day war of Vietnam, but it was its significance even greater with regards to the changes. But no one is naive. No one believes that the United States under Trump is sincere, or the political establishment is sincere. And of course, the Zionist lobby, the Israeli regime, the oligarchs in the United States, they will do anything they can to undermine it. But the irony is that the more they work to undermine this deal, the worse it's going to be for them, because the world is in serious trouble, and everyone will know that they are the ones who are wrecking any chance for the world to escape major economic recession, if not a major economic depression. They've already been carrying out 3 years of genocide, and now they want to continue the genocide and to somehow, through genocide, undermine the global economy as well. So it's all bad news for the Israeli regime and its supporters. And it's been bad news for 3 years. You and I have had this conversation both here and elsewhere on multiple occasions. The Israeli regime, since October the 7th, they've undermined themselves repeatedly. And Netanyahu is the prime minister who's going to ultimately be remembered as the person who destroyed Israel. I'm not saying the regime is going to collapse tomorrow or next month or next year or anything like that. But he has, because of his selfishness, and because of his will to stay in power no matter what, his genocidal behavior across the board, endless genocide, has wrecked the regime. And across the world, it's despite. And you know, just one point.
Go ahead, George.
Just one, I was telling George, our friend George Galloway, a while back, the Israeli regime also destroyed the anti-Iranian narrative that the collective Western media was working on for 47 years. They demolished it through their own actions.
Just to all three of you, Trump's press approach yesterday, I felt really, I can't believe I'm going to say that, I felt embarrassed for him, for his lack of historical knowledge, his raw racism. Babies are born with guns in their hands. But Professor Miranda, you know, we know each other very well. That's the propaganda my generation was fed from the very, very beginning, that these are barbaric people. But then the United States couldn't write a memorandum of understanding and ending a conflict that they started. It was the Iranians that wrote it for them. The ironies abound here. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the memorandum of understanding. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the Memorandum of Understanding. All right, now let's go to Ali here. It's been pointed out to me that this was the first multipolar war, and Iran has now earned its place as one of the poles in this new multipolar world. The Americans and the Europeans don't get it, and I don't think they ever will until they continue to experience these humiliations and disasters. But this is, you know, let's just a round number, for a half century, Iran has been missing from the pantheon of world powers, when the 3,000 years before it was there and everybody knew about it. And it's the way, you know, modern history is written. Modern history is written by the West, by the way. And all of a sudden, you know, it's like a big shock, a big surprise. But for those of us that understand the region, and all of you know it far better than I do, is that, no, Iran is returning to its proper place. Go ahead, Ali.
Well, actually, it's a nice topic to talk about, because if you have the basic knowledge regarding the history of our region and the civilizations that were ruling the region and the global system, actually, Iran has a very remarkable position here because many strategists and political theorists were talking about the civilizational background of the Iranians and how they were prevented from expressing this identity, this civilizational identity. And actually, now you can add to it the revolutionary identity to the civilizational identity. So I believe that the Americans and the Zionists, they have awakened the Hulk, actually. And they are still don't have any idea what would be the consequences on the long term, because as the threat perception that was shaping in the Zionist regime after October 7th, claiming that they were in an existential threat after the operation carried by the Palestinian resistance, they haven't taken into consideration the consequences of their continuous wars on multiple fronts, that it's going to change the way the other side is thinking about them. That's why I think if you have this idea, simple idea, that you got like 6-7 million Zionists now talking about existential threat, and they want to wage a war against tens of millions of Muslims around them, it's like a crazy idea that they are going to win in the end, taking into consideration that there is a nation with a civilizational identity and background and history, and not mentioning Turkey, actually, because now there are talks that the Turks themselves, they are feeling this threat. So I think that Benjamin Netanyahu and Donald Trump and all the Zionist bloc, they have no idea what they have done to the region.
Well, it's quite interesting, gentlemen, because, again, Professor Morandi has been on so many times, and we've chronicled the events over, the last 15 years. You know, and it wasn't too long ago that everyone was talking about the demise of the axis of resistance, and now it's back with a front and center. And it's because Iran demands that. I mean, if Israel can have allies, Iran can have allies, okay? And then when the Gulf monarchies finally wake up and smell the coffee to see where real security can be attained, and not from a power thousands and thousands of miles away, and did not live up to their commitment to defend them, this is going to be a realization that so much has changed. But Zaid, you know, let's take a step back, everybody. It's not like the United States and Israel give up easily, and they're going to do everything in their power to go for another round. And we can't dismiss that, and that's why vigilance is absolutely necessary. And this memorandum of understanding has to be the Americans have to keep their word to the letter, because there is always the possibility of reloading, as they say. Go ahead, in London.
Thank you, Peter. Yes, the U.S. military equipment in the region is indeed a cause for concern with regards to the longevity of this agreement. Like I said, it's a memorandum of understanding and by no means a peace accord. Similarly, this agreement hasn't been shown to Congress, and it will be. The president made that statement at the 11th hour. I'm also very interested to know how Iranian civil and military entities are aligned on the agreement. You would have seen a few drone strikes continued upon commercial vessels yesterday. So that'd be an interesting thing to watch, because it could be a pretext used by others. And then separately, there are a lot of issues in the memorandum of understanding from what we can see, which unresolved will be cause for disagreement going forward. The issue of tolling the straits, the issue of US military equipment leaving the region, the issue of who will pay for Iranian reconstruction. These have been left deliberately in the air. I think Islamabad was too quick to overlook these very important items. When
Zaid, I think also, to be fair, that those would be poison pills. And so why kill it before?
Sure.
Yeah.
But they're important military and political absolutely. Objectives and that remain
up. And the one point that you mentioned is the U.S. military presence in the region. On that point, it is intentionally vague. But again, I think that Iran, in writing it, didn't want to implant a poison pill that would destroy the entirety of the... Gentlemen, this is just a pause. This is a test to see which way we're going to go. And Professor Morandi, how has it been received in Iran? Because I understand that there are quite a few people that were not happy that they should continue the conflict. And of course, we all are painfully aware, even though there is a demand in the first point of the MOU about Lebanon, and, well, we all know what's still going on in Lebanon. Professor Morandi.
Well, the discussions in Tehran are very similar to the discussions that we're having now. And that's that we cannot trust the United States. Those who are critical of this MOU are basically saying that look at what happened in the past, and the United States is not sincere, and the United States is not going to carry out its obligations, which is a valid argument to make. Personally, I think though that this is a deal that is a good deal. It doesn't mean it's going to be implemented, and the Iranians have a lot of leverage. So if the Americans refrain from carrying out their side of the bargain, the Iranians are not going to carry out theirs. And, you know, the global economy is in a very dangerous situation. But the Iranian armed forces continue to reinforce their positions and enhance their capabilities. The United States has brought in lots of weaponry, and it has removed nothing. And during the ceasefire, after the 39 days of fighting, they brought in ground troops and a lot of equipment to carry out ground warfare. That hasn't gone anywhere. They are in these countries, in Kuwait, in Saudi Arabia, in the Emirates, in Bahrain, in Kuwait, in Jordan, all waiting for some sort of order. So the Iranians are not going to be naive. But I do think it is still a huge turning point, because this is a document that will be remembered in history, and it's going to make it much more difficult for Trump to restart the war. Not impossible. And it's going to make those forces that want to restart the war, the Zionist lobby, as I said earlier, look very ugly if they are successful. But I have no doubt, whether there is going to be war ahead of us or not, that there will be disruptions. The Israelis will try to kill as many people in Lebanon as they can, women and children, apartment blocks, they'll destroy them in order to wreck the agreement. And they'll do the same in Gaza. But we'll have to wait. It's far too early to see whether we're at the near the end or just somewhere in the middle. But I have a feeling that this is going to be a story that we'll be discussing in the months ahead.
I hope it's the Stalingrad of this entire process, okay? We see the desired end within sight here. Ali, I guess what I'm going to be looking at a lot is the new front that's opened up for Donald Trump, and that is his good friend Benjamin Netanyahu, because I think that's where all the fire... I don't want any more kinetic fireworks, gentlemen. I think the region has had enough, okay? But the political fireworks, that kinetic fireworks, that's good. That's on full display. And when Fox News goes loopy, you know a lot is happening, okay? I think that, you know, this is going to be more of an intra-conflict on the side that started this war, the war that they have obviously lost. Ali, go ahead.
Well, it's an interesting thing to watch, because the battle is looming in the horizon. Right now, if you take a look to what this clown named Mark Levin saying, commenting on the MOU, you would conclude easily that Benjamin Netanyahu is actually declaring his own battle with Donald Trump. Of course, they are trying to spare him. They are trying to put all the blame on J.D. Vance now, right now, and the negotiating team. And this is something stupid, actually, because...
The guy that was against the war. The guy that was against the...
Exactly. Well, they got Donald Trump in 2018, who took the decision to withdraw from the JCPOA. But their problem now is that Donald Trump himself reached this memorandum of understanding, so they cannot fire against Trump directly. That's why they are going after his team. And actually, if you take a look to the expressions on Marco Rubio's face as Donald Trump was having a speech in France, you would tell how would the situation with the Israel lobby and all its tools and stooges in Washington, they are now trying to have this balance to spare Trump from the attack and at the same time attack anyone under Trump. Actually, this is going to be something exciting as the we move forward towards the midterms in next November.
Yeah, what is the saying, gentlemen, when your adversaries are in a circular firing squad, don't get involved, don't interrupt, just let it go? All right, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. We have a fascinating discussion. I want to thank my guests in Tehran, Beirut, and in London. Of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here in RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.